start the bidding with one bar of Gold Press Latin.
Hello and welcome to the Collector's Corner, a supplementary edition of the Divine Treasury. My name is Mike Bovia, and on the Collector's Corner, we get to know the people behind the things we like to collect, or those who assist us in that collecting. We've talked to licensees, manufacturers, authors. We're working on getting authenticators and grading experts, all things that are necessary for today's collector. And today we're going to look at the auction world. But before that, I do need help for all the heavy lifting that's involved in doing this show. Now, despite what he might gain monetarily, if his collection went up for auction, he would definitely be in a corner crying. So let's welcome my co-host, the overly emotional Jamie Rogers. Jamie, how goes it today?
Well, that was quite the introduction there. Although, I don't know, if I keep going, I may have to try to get rid of...
sacrifice.
Some of these items through auction here. But doing okay. Work's been a little hectic this week, but I'm excited to have this conversation.
So as mentioned before, we're diving into the auction world today. And you heard us talk about the auction that the folks at Prop Store were doing last month with items from Star Trek Discovery. And here to discuss that and other elements of the business, including an upcoming auction that features some Star Trek items, we welcome VP of Business Development and Operations, Chuck Costas from Prop Store. And Chuck, we're so happy that we were able to have you come on and discuss everything that you guys are doing over at Prop Store today.
Well, thanks. I appreciate it. It's a fun business to be in the auction business. And, you know, ultimately, the best part about it is actually just connecting with fans of whatever properties it is, whether it be Star Trek, Star Wars, Marvel stuff, but being able to help bring some of the authentic things that were used in making people's favorite series and movies to their collections. So well, I'm sure we'll delve into that today, but glad to be here.
Absolutely. So maybe we could start off, if you have like a quick Reader's Digest version of the Prop Store history and how the business got started.
Sure. I'll make it more of a fairy tale. It started over 20 years ago. Stephen Lane, who's the CEO and is based out of London, he started the company. And I think it started more as, you know, you can look at it as treasure hunters. I think Stephen is one of those folks that is sort of realized early on. He sort of asked the question, hey, where does this stuff end up that when they're making a movie or a television show, where does it end up after they're done with the productions? And so he was one of the early people that tracked down these things and found people from the productions. He was very much into Star Wars as well, and sort of tracking down that stuff very early on. Started going out and finding collections of this stuff and then, you know, offering it to the public. And back in the day, it was a website only where we would put a lot of stuff up as fixed price items and offer them to the public. But over time, I think it's hard to keep track of time, but sometimes around 8 years ago, Prop Store started getting into auctions. And I think there were sort of two components of that. Prop Store does sort of the treasure hunting, if you want to look at it that way, to find the vintage content. And we do two auctions per year, one out of the London office now and one out of Los Angeles. And the Los Angeles office was started, 13 years ago or so by Brandon Allinger, who's the COO. So there's two of those auctions that are the vintage content. And a lot of that content comes from collectors that have had it for a number of years, or sometimes it might still even come from original sources of people that worked on the films or television shows, and they just happen to have it in their collections. And so we bring it to market that way. We do a lot of research on that type of stuff because it's coming from various sources. We have to make sure that it is authentic before we're going to offer it to the public. But then we also work directly with the studios. And I think the Los Angeles office specifically, we do a lot of work. In this case, you know, as we talk about the Star Trek Discovery auction, that was partnered with CBS Consumer Products. So CBS, who obviously brings all the new Star Trek television shows to you. But we've also worked with Paramount, which has done the features. And so we've done Star Trek auctions for the 2009 and Star Trek Into Darkness movie that fans got to enjoy. But we work with a whole host of other partners, Lionsgate, Legendary, Warner Brothers, Marvel, you know, we brought a whole host of auctions, and we try to produce maybe, you know, somewhere between 8 to 12 studio auctions per year and bring those. And those are really things that are coming directly from the set to the fans. And so you, from a Providence perspective, we don't have to do quite as much research in that we know it all came off the set and it came from the production. And then now we're putting it in the hands of fans.
Cool. So you kind of touched on an additional question that I had, but I think I'll mention it anyway. I'm assuming that back in the day when things first started, the company was reaching out to the studios to see what you could get to put up. And I'm gonna also assume that now that relationship's a little bit different, where they're coming to you with stuff that seemed like
line. My job as head of business development is really sort of building that relationship with the studios. So I look at it as, at this point in time, I think we have relationships with almost all of the major studios. And we try to keep a line of dialogue up around upcoming projects and what makes sense to auction and what they're comfortable with. Sometimes, you know, very frankly, production comes first as it, when you're making these things. So if there's going to be a sequel for a movie, or if they're going to be an ongoing television series, they may want to keep things. And I think it's frankly cheaper to produce or cheaper to keep things than it is to sort of make an extra in most cases. But after they're done with a lot of these productions, we will end up with it. But I think in the case of Star Trek Discovery, as we'll talk about here, this was a little bit of a unique case. And this is a sort of a newer trend where CBS was willing to work with us while the production is still going on. And so we literally went up to Canada and actually selected things off the set, which is a little bit rare. Usually on the television side, they will wait until the production has wrapped and then they'll deal with the assets after the production is wrapped. But in this case, I think, and especially unique to the Star Trek crowd, we really wanted to keep the Star Trek, you know, fans engaged. And it's a really great way hosting these auctions to not only give them a piece of sort of what's going on in the current world, but it just becomes more relevant and gets them more excited about hopefully the upcoming seasons and things that are happening there. So I think we wanted to create sort of a special relationship with this Discovery auction of actually getting things that were sort of still in production and still being used and offering those to fans while the series is still going on. And hopefully continues to go on for a while longer.
Yeah. I mean, we're heading towards season 4, I guess, in a few weeks. So yeah, there's still quite a bit that that could be had at this point. So you mentioned that you have the LA auction and you have a UK auction. Now, you just recently did the auction for Discovery props. So was that kind of like a supplement?
We do, as I mentioned, we do these sort of two tentpole auctions about every 6 months, one out of LA and one out of London. But those are everything. So you'll find anything from Austin Powers to X-Men, you know, and it kind of goes across the gamut of different properties. There's, you know, hundreds of different titles that we'll have in there. It could be something as small as like Top Secret, you know, a title that you very rarely see anything from. Or it could be something as large as Star Trek or Star Wars, which obviously are bigger properties, and where we may have, you know, hundreds of items that are for sale in those catalogs. So I think the current catalog has over 1,100 items, I believe, in it for the UK auction that's coming up here. And that's going to be between November 9th and 11th is the end date for that. And that'll be a live auction. And those are done live. But we also do studio auctions. And so the Star Trek Discovery auction was just dedicated on items from Star Trek Discovery and in this case also Short Treks that were sort of part of that Discovery world. And we focused primarily on seasons 1 and 2, although there was a few items in there that were reused in season 3 as well. So we tried to attribute those to season 3. Obviously, when we got the stuff and when we prepared the auction, really didn't have much insight into what was going on with season 4. And obviously, if we took the things they at that point in time, which was we actually collected the stuff from the set right after they had finished season 3, or when they were in the process of finishing up season 3. So we had some, you know, good insight as to what had been used on seasons 1, 2, and 3 at that point in time.
Well, so I'm gonna be a little ignorant here for a second. So you mentioned the UK auction is a live auction. Now, I worked at an auction house before, so to me, live auction means you've got an auctioneer up there shouting out numbers. But in this case, it's mostly online. So does that mean, you know, there's a specific amount of time that each item is up and you go in order of it and people have that time to bid and increase and however that goes through?
Yeah, I think with the live auctions, and I apologize, the Discovery was an online auction. So it was really anybody in the world can bid. It was online. There wasn't a live auctioneer. With our live auctions, there is a live auctioneer that is calling this. And so with the online auctions, they're timed. And so we basically one every minute will end. And then if somebody places a bid in the last minute, it'll extend the clock on that particular item. So there is no sniping as you would find in eBay on that. So it's a little different format. Yeah, everybody kind of, I mean, it's always kind of like, I feel cheated when somebody comes in and snipes you on something.
Yep.
But with a live auction, there is a live auctioneer. So it comes up lot by lot. And so, you know, if you're on lot 151, you know, we'll go through all the bidding for that. That usually takes about a minute per item, you know, give or take. Mm-hmm. Just depends on how intense the bidding is for that. And people can bid on the phone. And so it's, what we'll do is some people will prefer to just be on the phone and we'll have somebody call from the auction house and be on the phone with that bidder and actually bid live as if they were in the room. And in today's world, we've had to adapt the business a bit where we used to have, you know, big live settings for doing these things. Obviously with COVID for the last couple of years, we've adapted where it is still quote unquote live, but it's really more people are participating online. The live component is the fact that there's a live auctioneer and there are people actually bidding for phone bidders in the room, sort of as if they were, you know, bidders in the room at that point in time. But that's for the bigger, we do that for the big auctions. We do occasionally do some of the studio auctions as live auctions as well. But for Star Trek Discovery here, this was, we did this as an online auction. And again, I think it's just, it's not necessarily one is better than the other. But we felt like that was the appropriate thing to just allow people to have a chance to make sure that they were bidding on the catalog of things and seemed to work out well. So we were happy with the way that it all played out.
I appreciate that explanation because it makes me not feel as ignorant as I thought I was going to be.
Well, especially with COVID, it's changed the definition of what is live, what isn't, and all that. And I think even when we've done, as far as our business goes, we've had to adapt with COVID where we typically would also do live previews. And in this case, we did. We actually were able to do a live preview at Star Trek Day. So CBS had invited us to Star Trek Day, which was taking place at the Skirball here in Los Angeles. And we were able to set up as if it was a convention, but we actually got to be outside. So we had a nice little patio area where we displayed some of the costumes and got to talk to fans about it. And that would be, you know, what we would typically do either at a convention or we'd set up another display to do that. So it was great to do that. But in some cases with some of our other auctions, we will preview and allow people to get on a Zoom call with us and talk through the items if they've got questions about, you know, either the item itself and we could show them the labels that are in there or what something is constructed of. It gives us a chance to really interact with fans one-on-one. And that's something I think is a good thing that comes out of COVID is just the innovation and the fact that, you know, a lot of people are all over the world. They're not only here in Los Angeles. So not that, you know, we don't want to limit who can actually come and see the items. And so I think that's another great way of just connecting with fans all over the world.
Going back to something you said before, you mentioned that at this point, you pretty much know that the items are coming directly from set. So does that mean that, all right, let me ask the question differently. Does Prop Store then provide a certificate of authenticity to the buyer, or is it just something everyone at this point knows that everything is coming from the set, essentially?
No, that's a good question. And yes, we do. A Prop Store, whether you buy in our sort of tentpole auctions for the year, what we call our entertainment memorabilia live auctions, or you buy something on our website, whatever you buy from Prop Store will come with a certificate of authenticity. But specifically for Discovery, and this was a very cool thing, sometimes we'll create custom COAs. And in this case, Alex Kurtzman himself actually wanted to be part of the process and actually co-signed each of the COAs, you know, guaranteeing that this was stuff that came off of the set and was part of the Star Trek universe. So they're actually co-signed by myself and Alex Kurtzman. And we put, you know, exactly what those are. I think, you know, what we can say is this was something that was used in the production. We don't, you know, I think a lot of times we will try to go so far as to try to screen match, because I think in the world of collecting, you know, movie props and costumes, trying to screen match it and know that this is the one that appeared on this scene, you have to keep in mind that in many cases there are multiple costumes. You see,
right,
especially when somebody gets injured, you know, you see that, you know, that there's a hole in the costume that gets formed because they got stabbed, you know, here, and maybe they've got a little bit of blood on them or something like that, and that might grow over time. They typically have different stages of what they call distressing in this business. And so you might have five Laurel costumes, depending on sort of the different stages. They also have a stunt version of that for the stunt actor, and then they will have the main character, and there might be multiple changes for that. So keep in mind that there isn't, in the world of collecting movie props and costumes, whether it's a prop or a costume, there isn't just one of anything. But what we don't necessarily do for the studio auctions is go through and try to tell you this one was used in exactly this scene, because there might, you know, the scene might actually have used four or five different costumes at different points during that scene itself, although it looks like the exact same costume to the naked eye, so to speak. But you know, we can guarantee that this stuff is coming from the set. And I think we allow the people that are buying these to do a little bit more research, and hopefully they will be able to find whether this particular costume that they're buying matches to a very particular scene.
That makes a lot of sense. So when you and I were talking before, Chuck, you had mentioned that a prop store has been, you try to take into account what your buyers might be looking for and the range of items that they might be able to purchase. So care to expand on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people think about auctions, and you hear about the items that sold for hundreds of thousands of dollars. And I think that's sort of what the press latches onto. Obviously, big numbers get big attention. But when prop store structures an auction, we really look at trying to provide a wide variety, because I think there are different collectors. Yes, there are people that want to spend $100,000, but the average collector can't, you know, spend that kind of money. They're looking for a variety of different things, anything from autographs that might be sort of less expensive, you know, to background costumes, to the key character costumes. And so when we structure an auction, we try to make something available at every price point. And especially when we're working with studios, one thing I find is that the studio auctions, very frankly, the stuff that's being produced today doesn't go for as much as maybe the vintage stuff that everybody else is looking for. It hasn't necessarily found a price point yet. And a lot of times we'll release hundreds of items all at once. And so there is a sort of a wide variety of different things you can choose from, which also keeps the prices reasonable. So with the Discovery auction specifically, we started everything at $100. Our thought process on that was, you know, we want to, it'll obviously get bid up to whatever it is, but we want to make it accessible to everybody. And we don't want to put any kind of price reserves on any of these things. So everything started at $100 and just got bid up from there. And obviously some things stayed closer to that $100 range. I don't think anything actually sold for exactly $100. But, you know, obviously some, as we'll get into prices here, some things went into tens of thousands of dollars. And so, but when we structured the auction, we knew that we would have different content that would appeal at different price points to different people. And as you say too, we also want to make sure that we have variety, you know, from Klingons to, you know, to Starfleet uniforms, to background things. You know, some people collect, you know, want to put something to put on their wall. So we wanted to make sure that we had some set deck pieces. We had some very cool Vulcan masks that I thought were just, you know, amazing, especially if you put like a light behind them, they would just display so well on your wall. You know, to obviously costumes that people might want to wear at a cosplay event, you know, when they go to a Star Trek convention or something like that. So, you know, finding the right variety of things actually took a while, and it took a lot of conversations between us and CBS to make sure that we could have the right variety of material available for the auction when it ultimately got launched.
Which one surprised you the most, where people had a lot of demand for, or maybe went for a price that you didn't even think was even, you know, possible?
I think, yeah, I wouldn't say it surprised us the most. I think the badges, we weren't quite sure how those were going to do. You know, in the past, you know, Discovery was very special as it related to the badges. And just to give people a little bit of background on that, typically, if you looked at past Star Trek productions, a lot of the badges were plastic. They were sort of stick-on. They went on the costumes, but they, you know, they were all interchangeable. With Discovery, as most Star Trek fans know, they actually created a special badge where the pips were actually on the badge, which actually created a different dynamic where I can't remember exactly if it was 26 or 28 or 24, exactly how many, but there was a number of different variations You know, and every badge for every character, you sort of needed a specific badge, although some characters shared, I guess, the same rank. And so they could be interchangeable between a few. So the one of the badges, we actually had a Captain Pike badge, which we knew Pike was going to be popular. We just didn't know exactly how popular he was going to be. But we had one that was attributed to him that we knew that he used. And that closed with a $14,000 hammer. The one that was a little bit more surprising is we had another hero captain rank badge that went for even more. It went for $17,000 and it wasn't attributed to Pike. So it was kind of surprising in some ways that a sort of one that couldn't be attributed to a specific character went for a little bit more. But I think that was part of a mentality of you know, somebody really wanting the Pike badge, and then maybe thinking, assuming that the one that sold later that wasn't identified for a particular character would go for less, but because it was the last one that we had, it actually ended up going for more, you know, as far as the bidding goes.
Badges, I mean, if they were going for that much, I mean, what did you see with the uniforms? What kind of interest did the uniforms garner, obviously?
Yeah, I mean, again, Pike was the standout character here, and I think, you know, I think it shows a lot of enthusiasm for Strange New Worlds. It's coming up, and I think that's a great sign. I think everybody has sort of attached themselves to that character already. But I think it was also sort of a scarcity thing. So we had obviously a number of different blue Starfleet uniforms, and obviously there was three sort of main variations, which was obviously the silver, bronze, and the gold, and then there was the Mirror Universe costume. So we had a number of different ones, and frankly they all looked very similar to each other. I think what was a little surprising was that there were, you know, because they all look very similar and on a mannequin they would look similar, there was definitely from fans a very specific character that they wanted. So Lorca was one of the characters that really stood out. So I think his main captain costume went for $18,000 hammer, where, you know, a background costume, you know, would probably average somewhere around $1,000 and it would look probably very similar to that. But obviously the Pike did very well. That was the high seller with a $29,000 hammer price on it. But that was the only sort of yellow Pike costume that we had for sale in this. And it was really his, you sort of look at it in the history of Star Trek, it'll be his quote unquote first appearance costume that he had. So there weren't, you know, even if they do make more Pike costumes down the road, there aren't going to be that many more of that particular costume ever available. So I can understand why that there would be a strong desire from a fan perspective to own that particular costume.
Yeah, and obviously wasn't in Discovery for very long either, because he was mostly in the blue. So now, Chuck, can you talk me through the whole bidding process? Like, how did that work? Was it all done online? Did you have people phoning in things as well?
It was all online for this particular one. No phone bidders on this. So everybody had an equal playing field to bid against each other. And the way that it would work is you would see, we set a specific time that each lot would end. I think we scheduled it a minute apart. And then if somebody bid in the last minute, it would just reset the clock so that people could continue to bid and they didn't necessarily have to snipe or you know, sneak in at the very last second and try to win it. So it tried to level the playing field from that perspective. And, you know, we thought that worked very well, because as you looked at the auction, things were spread out. So you could sort of, you could bid in advance. And that was the other thing too, is that we did open the auction on September 2nd and it ran through September 16th. So you can go on September 2nd and place all your bids if you want. And it would only advance, you could put in a higher bid, but it would only advance it up to, you know, the if somebody else bid underneath you, then it would advance your bid up there. So that, you know, it's a very easy way of bidding there. But we did find most people came in the last day of the auction and placed those last minute bids against each other. You know, it's sort of how people are conditioned to bid these days.
Yeah. I like that there was no sniping, because Jamie and I often will be messaging each other back and forth saying that we were the leading bidder up until a second before close and got sniped. So
yeah, we're either the snipey or the sniped, one of the two.
Yeah.
I guess you probably want to be the snipey rather than the sniped, but yeah.
Oh, in fact, I'm getting ready to be the snipey pretty soon with some of these the new autograph cards that just came out.
In typical Jamie fashion, he's bidding during a show.
No, I'm not doing it right now.
Oh, okay.
I'm trying to balance work right now, other than the than the show. But that'll be later on, Michael.
So, Chuck, one of the things that I got to say actually surprised me when I looked through the Discovery catalog and the results was the Alice's Adventures in Wonderland book. Was that a surprise to you how high that ended up going?
Yes and no. I sort of had my eye on that one to wonder if it was going to go. It probably went a little higher than I expected, but I guess I equate it to the Resican flute, right? And Prop Store actually sold in our Entertainment Memorabilia Live auction in Los Angeles a few months ago. We sold the Resican flute again, and I think with hammer price and buyer's premium, it went for $237,500, which is a pretty hefty sum. And it sold years ago for, I think, around $48,000, if my memory serves me correctly. But I look at it as a similar piece, where if you love that character, and obviously Burnham is the main character in Star Trek Discovery, it's an object that really sort of summarizes the character's sort of spirit in one object. And I think that's what people recognize in that particular book. So it stood out from the rest as far as, whether it's a phaser or other things she might use. It really embodied the character. And I think that's what people sometimes look for when they're looking at these props.
I was going to say too, I think it really connected her character to Spock as well. And I mean, things that have anything to do with the Spock character in the Star Trek universe generally, do very, very well from an auction standpoint. So I would think that connection to Spock as well, and, Spock's heritage definitely helped the cause.
Yeah. But yes, a lot for a book. Yes.
For a prop book. Yeah.
For a prop book. Yeah.
So, all right. So we've talked about the Discovery auction, and that is now in the rearview mirror. So let's fast forward to, as we discussed briefly earlier on the show, the UK entertainment auction that's coming up. And there are 13 items, if I counted correctly, that feature Star Trek. However, I've got to believe that knowing our audience, a lot of the stuff in that auction would be of interest to them. The things I was showing my daughter as I was going through were the hoverboard from Back to the Future 2, which I saw is the cover of your catalog. A number of Star Wars items. So I think the question that I have to lead off about talking about the UK auction is, is it UK only, or if you know how to convert pounds to dollars, are you able to bid in that auction?
Okay, I guess good first question. Just because it's being held out of the UK doesn't mean that all currency isn't accepted. And in fact, I believe this is the first auction that we are going to be accepting cryptocurrency as well. So if you have that as well, you can actually bid in the auction. But no, it doesn't require it. Ultimately, when you pay, it will be converted into pounds. And so when you bid in pounds, keep that in mind that you're not bidding in dollars, but we'll make it easy. Credit cards these days make it very easy to pay for things in a different currency. So anybody all over the world can bid in this auction. And the majority of the items are being kept in the UK. So they would be shipped out of the UK. But, we always consider these, whether they're out of Los Angeles or the UK, worldwide auctions. And a lot of our buyers are, frankly, scattered all over the world, whether it be Australia or China or other places.
Now I know Mike kind of talked about the hoverboard, but what are some of the big ticket items, that you want our listening audience to know as part of this auction?
Yeah. And I'm sure we'll get more into the Star Trek ones. I think some cool things is we've got a screen matched Wilson. So we talked a little bit about, we don't necessarily always screen match things, especially when we're coming from a studio auction. But when we get the more vintage content, we do try to do that as much as possible. And there's always like very specific flaws on things that you can look at to try to match it. And this is a screen match Wilson from, that Tom Hanks spent a good portion of his time on, stranded on an island. So that's a very cool piece that I hadn't seen before. For Blade Runner fans, there is a screen matched Harrison Ford, or a photo match, Harrison Ford shirt from Blade Runner. So the Rick Deckard character, we have that as well, which I think is also a rarity. You rarely find anything from Blade Runner, and especially to find something that's screen match is very cool. Also, given that it's sort of Christmas season, one of the specific movies that I wanted to try to find things for, it's always tough when you're doing these auctions because it's like, I would really like something from this for fans, but you can't always find it. But we were able to find a bunch of items from Elf. And so there's a great selection just in time for the Christmas season of Elf. So there's a Will Ferrell hero Elf costume. We also have the rocket, if you remember, that falls off of the sleigh. We have one of those. There was actually two of those, one that burnt up and then one that was, the hero clean version. And we have got the clean version of that. For Jurassic Park fans, we've got, we've got a crushed Jurassic Park vehicle, which looks very cool. For horror fans, we've got a Freddy Krueger sweater from Wes Craven's New Nightmare. So those are just kind of cool. We also have a Jason hockey mask. We sold a screen match version of that for over $200,000 in the last auction. This one is not the same screen match one, but looks very similar to that. So very cool. James Bond, we've got a screen matched Sean Connery suit from You Only Live Twice, which is always very cool to find James Bond items, very hard to find out in the marketplace. So, I've gone through a number of different titles there, and we've got a whole bunch more. There are hundreds more, whether it's Harry Potter or others. You'll hopefully find something in the auction that you like, including Star Trek. And I guess on the space front, from a series that I also watched sort of alongside Star Trek, which was Space 1999, we've got one of the Eagle transporters, one of the actual models that was used for filming the space scenes on those. So that also brought back a lot of memories from childhood for me.
I was hoping you were going to name that.
I was going to say, too, I noticed you got a lot from Aliens as well. Pretty decent size catalog. Did you get all those from the same source there as well?
No, I mean, especially when we put these auctions together, always coming from different sources. Even the Elf items didn't all necessarily come from one particular place, even though it looks like a collection. So no, they didn't come from the same place. But yeah, we do have a great we have a pulse rifle that's in there. We had we had one in our previous auction that again did very well. And here, this is a stunt version of the pulse rifle that we have for sale. But yeah, always get, Aliens. There are certain titles that we always try to find things from. And I think Aliens, Predator, Star Wars, Star Trek, those are sort of staples of every one of our auctions. Things like Elf, though, smaller movies, not as much stuff that's necessarily floating around, not necessarily any sequels out there. So not as easy to find things from very niche movies. But we try to find things for... frankly, we know that there's fans of almost a whole bunch of movies out there, and we try to find as much of a variety as we can and put those in our catalogs.
So we mentioned there is Star Trek items in this auction coming up. One of the more unique things I've got to say that I saw within the Star Trek catalog was a portion of Data's arm from The Next Generation. And, Jamie's head just perked up because of his Next Generation collection. We talked about how with Discovery, everything came directly from CBS. So I'm assuming some of this stuff, because of dates that would be associated with some of this product that's in here, came from a number of different sources as opposed to just from Paramount. Am I correct?
That's correct. Yeah. I think as I talked about with this auction, a lot of what we do is either coming directly from collectors that have had collections of this. Sometimes you'll find, I would say it's always sort of obvious, but sometimes you'll see where we have three or four different costumes. They may have come from the same collector and same collection where they were trying to assemble things. And frankly, they've just decided at this point they can part with things. But we do find it is coming from multiple sources. And a lot of our sources are people that worked on the films and may have gotten it. They may, it may have come from special effects companies that were making things for this and got the items back. It may be people that worked on the sets and the items were gifted to them. And very frankly, they also, a lot of times, especially in the 80s and 90s, they would have parking lot sales. And so after production was over, rather than doing an auction like we would today, officially through someone like Prop Store, they would just allow sort of cast, crew employees, people that worked on the set to go buy items, for relatively reasonable prices. And so some people sort of stockpiled those and put them in their, in their, you know, in their garages, but they could also, sometimes stuff was thrown out, and a lot of times, and that's the shame of it with a lot of these productions, especially the large set deck pieces, they end up in trash cans, which, you know, part of our message is we want to, you know, we want to be able to offer these things to fans, but it's also a way of being sort of environmentally green. And if you're going to destroy or do that, it's a shame when you have to put things into a landfill. And so we try as much as we can to work with the studios to keep things out of landfill, to put them in people's collections that will sort of love and care for them for future generations. But yeah, in these cases, most of the material, although it could come from the studios, a lot of the material could, you know, a lot of it does come from collectors or people that were in the industry that have this stuff.
Yeah, I was gonna say it kind of made me think too of like, and how Star Trek is kind of unique, because a lot of times they would take certain set pieces and move them from one production to another, and then it went into the warehouse, obviously. But you think of like a movie like a Blade Runner, let's say, that doesn't do well, and you know, commercially didn't do well. Where's it going to go from there? They're not thinking of any sequels until it becomes a cult classic. So all that stuff's just going to go in the garbage or get sold to or given away to people. I mean, I think I even remember the TNG bridge, the Next Generation bridge, being just basically trashed and thrown out to the, you know, to the back curb. So that's, it's definitely interesting hearing you talk about that process.
Yeah. And that's why it's great, you know, that we're, you know, we typically do work with the studios these days to help them make decisions around, frankly, what's, you know, what we didn't talk about is the archives, right? A lot of companies, including Paramount, which obviously makes a lot of the Star Trek films, they have an archive where they keep what they consider is important, whether it be for a marketing display 50 years from now, or just things that they want to reference for future productions. They will keep an archive of sort of the key important stuff. But as we also talked about, there could be five versions of a costume, and the archive might keep two of them, but they may not necessarily need all of them, especially this, maybe the stunt versions of those. And that's where we try to come in and, you know, make those available to fans. But in some cases, you know, especially in years past, those same costumes would have either, you know, they'd gone on these sidewalk sales, or they, you know, unfortunately could have even been thrown in the trash, which would be a shame. But, you know, there were, back in the days as well, there were people that were sort of keeping their eyes out for a lot of this stuff. But a lot of, if you think about like a lot of your television productions today, a lot of that stuff ends up at secondhand stores because it's just normal clothing. And so they end up recycling it. And it might be, may have been worn by your favorite actor, but they're just selling the pair of pants because, you know, it's a pair of pants that somebody else can wear and reuse at this point in time. So that's what ends up happening with a lot of Hollywood stuff.
Or you even see this stuff getting put into trading cards too. I mean, that's a whole different, you know, thing that didn't exist 20, 30 years ago. But now it's very prevalent today, and it's a very big market. So that, you know, you're not going to see as much of these things sometimes because of, you know, being put in trading cards.
That's true. I always hope that they're taking the ones that are sort of like ripped and, you know, that wouldn't be as desirable, you know, but who knows what, you know, exactly where they're sourcing all these things from. But actually, I'm sure that some of the costumes we've actually sold have ended up as trading cards, which is kind of a weird thing to think about. But we're sort of into the preservation. We sort of hope that a lot of these things are going to be preserved by collectors out there and for future generations. And it's funny. I end up, in my personal collection, I have a lot of Marvel stuff that I've had, whether it be comic book original art or other things. And I've tried to lend it back to museums as they need it, for exhibits. And I hope Star Trek fans also, you know, will keep their things. And if they're needed in the future, you know, we'll be generous enough to lend them to people out there.
Yeah. I've actually been to a few different, museum type shows of Star Trek, CBS, Paramount. And a lot of times you do see the credit down bottom lent by, you know, X, whoever, doing the same thing. So yeah, that's a real nice thing that you do and that other people are doing. So yeah. Kudos to all that, that do that thing for our enjoyment.
Yeah, I think the Star Trek community especially is very generous, and it's a great community and very loving community, and it's great to see the sort of those acts of generosity. Yeah, Mike. One thing we didn't touch on that I'd like to touch on, which was as part of the Star Trek Discovery auction, it was great. And I don't know if you guys watched these videos, but Susan Nimoy actually put two items from Leonard Nimoy's collection into the auction.
Yep. That was one of the things I wanted to ask about. So
So let's talk about that. You know, first I have to say Susan and frankly the entire Nimoy family have been amazing to sort of get to meet Susan, talk to her, and really just understand just how much they want to give back. In this case, the two items that we sold, and we sold Leonard Nimoy's pinball machine and a set of ears from Star Trek Into Darkness, which was Leonard's last portrayal of the Spock character and sort of very significant from that perspective. She wanted to donate that. And every year, the Nimoy family actually donates money for COPD research at UCLA under Dr. John Belperio. And, you know, to see her excitement, you know, the fact that we were able to raise some money for this and give back. She really wanted to do everything she could to sort of connect with the fans. And so she recorded videos with us talking about Leonard, talking about his life, talking what Star Trek meant to Leonard, as well as these particular objects. I thought it was just very generous of her to do that because she doesn't make very many public appearances these days. And for her, you know, for this being a cause that she really believed in, and the fact that she also wanted to reach out to Star Trek fans and connect with them again, I thought it was a very special occasion, and I'm glad that this auction could help provide that as a way of her sort of being able to connect again with the community.
Yeah, that was really cool. And very, you know, the Spock years on the surface, not all that unique, but as you said, it's a set of ears from the last time he portrayed Spock. And then that pinball machine, man, that's a real unique piece, especially because of who owned it.
Yeah. And I have to say, it's been sitting outside my office here and I've played it on occasion. It's a pretty amazing pinball machine. And yeah, I mean, this, just to, you know, for people that didn't follow along, the Spock ears hammered for $9,000. They were nicely framed. Susan had, mm-hmm. When they got them, I think JJ had actually gifted them to Leonard at the end, and they actually had them framed up very nicely. So couldn't have any better provenance on those. And then the pinball machine itself, I believe that ended with a hammer price of, if I'm not mistaken, $7,500, which, you know, frankly, for that pinball machine is a pretty good deal. I mean, I think they yeah. typically sell maybe a little less than that. But pinball machines in general have been very collectible. And just the enjoyment of that, knowing that you're playing Leonard, you know, one that not only Leonard played on, but the entire Nimoy family sort of played on, is just something great to think about every time you're playing that pinball machine.
Right. Absolutely. So my last question, and you've alluded to this a couple times in our discussion here, is what is the time frame that it takes for Prop Store to put together just one of these auctions?
Well, I'll take the questions separately. So we do, like I said, we do one out of Los Angeles and we do one out of London each year. And I think it's really sort of a year-long process for each of our auction or for each of our offices to try to collect different stuff for that. Typically, I guess there's a six-month cycle, and we do the Los Angeles office may contribute things to the London auction and vice versa. But it's usually a year-long thing, and we're really sort of thinking about the end product, almost like a curated museum exhibit. For a studio auction, this is an interesting story in that we originally plan on having this Discovery auction last year, actually in 2020, and everybody knows what happened in 2020. I had made my set visit up there. I went up there to the set, as I said, when they were finishing season 3, which was in March of 2020. And because they film in Canada, what ended up happening is they ended up closing the borders between Canada and the U.S. shortly after that. And so even though we had made the selections of things that we thought fans would want for the auction, we couldn't actually get them down from Canada to the U.S. for almost a year because the borders were closed and because we couldn't get, you know, frankly, the sets were closed and the people that normally worked on Star Trek couldn't necessarily get access to the sets to help us finalize and get things off of there. So it took a little longer, you know, it took over a year in this case for us to be able to bring that auction to fans. But I do think that was extenuating circumstances. But we do, you know, I think in general with studio auctions, we try to work a year in advance and sort of plan it out, understand when we can get access to things. It does take, you know, in this case, we had approximately 200. We typically do maybe between 200 and 300 items for a studio auction. It has to go through numerous processes, including what we call our intake, which is going through everything, putting it in lots, you know, taking sort of inventory photographs of it, getting it ready for our photography team and copies team to write up different descriptions around, you know, and to fill out sort of what we would normally publish on our online auctions or in our print catalogs as well. So it takes, you know, by the time we get things, it typically takes us maybe 3 to 4 months to process things at a minimum, depending on how many projects we have going on at the same time. And then we've got to start the whole marketing campaign, you know, coordinating with, in this case, CBS and their PR departments and marketing departments to make sure that we're, you know, coordinating with different things. And in this case, we were working around Star Trek Day. So I think we wanted to make sure that we fit in, that, you know, the messaging around it was very clear with everything else that was going on with Star Trek Day. And as I mentioned, we got to be part of Star Trek Day, at least the live events that were going on for Star Trek Day, which was a great honor.
So Chuck, I'm going to, for my last question, I'm going to kind of do something interesting. So on our show, normally when we have a guest and we're talking about their collection, we ask them 3 questions in regards to basically their favorite items and things like that. So I'm going to do the same for you in regards to the auctions. Okay. So what item is the most, so we call it the Grand Nagus Award. So maybe the most expensive item you guys have ever sold that you can remember.
And I've only been a prop store myself for about 4 years. Within that 4 years, the most expensive item we've sold, at least publicly, has been Raiders of the Lost Ark Indiana Jones hat. And so that went for, it was actually sold out of London, but the equivalent was over $500,000 for that.
Wow.
But that was Indy's hat that was worn. It was actually screen matched to a good portion of the movie, which is very cool. And I would love to own that one piece myself if I could have something in my collection. But yeah, not everybody's got that kind of, you know, money to invest in it. But.
So now the Kivas Fajo Award. So this is it's kind of like the white whale. So if there's any item that you could get into your auction to sell, if you had a wish of that one item that's eluding you, which one would it be?
Are we going to limit ourselves to Star Trek, or are we going to put ourselves?
Nope. You can whatever item in the world.
I would say in the prop world would probably be like a lightsaber from Star Wars, like a Luke or a Darth Vader lightsaber. I think that would be in one that's proven. I hate to say there's been a lot of ones that are more alleged than anything else in the world of props, but if we could find a true sort of screen matched version of one of those, I think that would be very significant.
And then the last one, we call it the Resican Flute Award, harking back to you talking about the Resican Flute. So the one that holds the most sentimental value to you. So what item that has traveled into through prop store and gone out do you kind of have a connection with?
I'll talk about one that, I guess it did indirectly come through prop store. I am a big, fan of Marvel's The Punisher. And so, something that meant something very important to me, not the most expensive item, but I had Tom Jane's costume for, the original, that 2002 Punisher movie. I think it was 2002. I might be wrong off on the year, but I did not have the jacket that went with the sort of the main part of that. And so the jacket, somebody actually called and said, look, I have the jacket, but I'm looking for the person that has the rest of the costume so I can reunite it. And it was one of these odd things where I happened to be that guy. And it was just like, you know, he was a very nice person. He was just like, look, I really just want to put the costume back together. And so for me, you know, it was nice that person really wanted to do that. And for me, I was the other person that was very happy to reunite those. And I, you know, love that movie. So I think, you know, wasn't the most expensive purchase in the world, but to me meant a lot to just, because I had bid on that and whatever it was when the auction originally happened in the early 2000s, and I didn't have enough money for it. And so it was nice to be able to reunite those two pieces of the costume. So that was a great thing. So.
That's such a great story.
It is. And I like that you dovetailed a normal episode into that, Jamie. That's actually a really cool piece that we were able to thread in there.
Sorry, it wasn't Star Trek, though, in this case. But
No, that's fine. That's
if
fine.
I had to have a Star Trek piece, I would love to have a original phaser from the original series. But
wouldn't we
a lot of people would as well. Yes.
Yeah.
I would like to have one just to be able to sell it to continue my my purchasing.
I would probably keep it, but yeah, I'd find other things to sell. That's a very cool piece.
Yeah. Well, from November 9th through November 11th, you can bid on various entertainment items in the UK location auction from Prop Store, the entertainment auction, which includes 13 Star Trek items. Go to Prop Store. Oh, go for it.
I think it's actually more. There's actually two sections. Yeah. If you go online, you may not notice it, but if you go in the catalog, on day one, there's a number of Star Trek items. It might be the 13 you're talking about. But then afterwards, on day three, I believe, there are a number of other things like storyboards and artwork. And there's a whole bunch of items that you can also
I definitely didn't see those. So, yes, check it out.
So there's even more. And I would also say if you go to propstore.com, we actually have items available right now that you can buy that are Star Trek related. So we've got original comic art. We've got storyboards, costume designs, masks and appliances from Star Trek Into Darkness, autograph items, crew items, costumes. Take a look at that, and you can buy something even today from Star Trek. And hopefully in the future we'll continue to do other auctions that will include Star Trek content for fans. But we just love the Star Trek community, and glad that we can play our part in contributing back.
Well, his name is Chuck Costas, and he is the Vice President of Business Development and what was the other part? And Operations. Yeah. That's going to be an interesting piece together that I do there.
Yeah, I think I need to shorten my title a little bit.
So thank you very much for joining us, Chuck. We definitely appreciate you coming on and talking about this auction, this whole auction world that's out there for us to spend our money on.
My pleasure, guys. Live long and prosper, everybody.
Is there a product or collecting service you'd like to hear featured on the Collector's Corner? Message us at @divine_treasury on Twitter. Until next time, you've been listening to the Collector's Corner, part of the Divine Treasury on the Trek Geeks Podcast Network. The Divine Treasury, connecting through collecting.
Music for the Divine Treasury is provided by 5-Year Mission. They're writing an original song for each episode of Star Trek. Hear more of their music at 5yearmission.net. The Divine Treasury is a production of Coconut Media Works. Executive producers Bill Smith and Dan Davidson. For more great Star Trek discussion, discover the other shows of the Trek Geeks Podcast Network at trekgeeks.com or find us in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app.